Today's What Do You Think program is brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
It is currently 10 minutes past 10 o'clock. Our guest today in the studio, Carl Osentoski, Executive Director of the Huron County EDC. Thanks for joining us again, Carl.
Anytime.
Well, isn't what you say when I call you.
Oh, well.
Carl and I go back a long time, so we kid and tease. EDC seems to be something everybody wants to see is economic development. The whole state seems to be trying to gear up for that, so you're in the cat seat here locally with it and have to get things moving. We're going to talk about some of the things your office is working on. We talked a little bit before the show, some of the things you wanted to touch on. You wanted to touch about your brownfields projects that... You may have some help for people at least figuring out what they might have in the way of a problem.
Exactly. A lot of people don't understand when they'll hear the term brownfield. And a brownfield is a contaminated site, something where there might have been a gas station, a dry cleaners.
In a bigger city, an old factory where they had stuff that who knows what was on that site ever.
It could be a commercial development. We're focused on commercial and industrial properties, not residential, unfortunately. And what we were able to do is about 2 years ago got a grant from the EPA to help us do the testing on the site so that if somebody is interested in buying a old industrial building, we could use our grant money to go out and pay an engineering firm to come in, do soil tests, do a historic review of what the building had been used for, and to make a determination on if there's any contaminants or the perception of contamination. We've run into that a couple times. And do some soil testing to ensure that the site is either contaminated or it's not contaminated. And then we work with hopefully the new property owner on what they should be doing on that site.
Potential property owner. They usually don't buy until they know what they're getting.
We encourage people, especially with older sites that there's some question about, because we've done a gas station project that has historically been a gas station. And you know, everybody in the community knew that it was probably contaminated. But
because in the old days, you spilled a little every time you took the hose out, and all that just winds up into the ground. And if a tank leaks a little bit before you catch it and replace it, it's in there. And the old days, we didn't quite dig up half the county to get rid of it.
Exactly. So what we're able to do with the grants that we have is to go out, work with those property owners, do the soil test, do the analysis, work with the DEQ, and come up with a plan so that the new property owner can still buy the property and be protected from any responsibility for any of the previous contamination. So it's a way that we can get, as an EDC, we can get projects into those sites that have sewer and water and roads already there. We don't have to work in a greenfield site. We can keep the businesses in the downtowns. Usually these are in communities, in downtowns, or in their industrial parks. And we don't have to build into, farmland.
And were probably used before because they have a good location to begin with.
Exactly. They're on a high traffic area. They're on a good street. We just need to come up with a strategy. And we think we've got a good strategy to help get those properties back into active reuse.
Now, money for these types of projects is finite. I mean, you know, you've... Carl doesn't get it. Here's a checkbook. Write whatever you need.
I wish that
so,
I could do that.
So do you basically look at something that there could be a pending sale on rather than just somebody saying, I've got a property here and I need to know what it is so I can go out and sell it?
Right. One of the criteria that we always use is there a project coming into the site? We don't want to just go out and do an analysis of, you know, an old, I keep picking on gas stations, but...
Everybody picks on gas stations when it comes to brownfields.
Well, you know, we just don't want to go out and do a test on a piece of property, an old industrial building that there's going to be nothing happening with, because that doesn't serve anybody's purpose. We don't want to spend the money, waste taxpayer dollars. What we want to do is to focus on those properties that somebody's interested in purchasing and putting back into productive reuse, whether it's reusing it as an industrial building or, reusing a commercial building downtown. as long as there's job creation and private sector investment, we want to be participants in that. And it helps in the sales transaction. A lot of banks will require some brownfield testing and phase one, phase two environmentals at the very minimum in order to finance those kind of deals.
Now, if you don't have a pending project going in, the property owner themselves might want to do something like this just so that they can show a potential buyer that this is what's here, you know, and it's all done for you and they don't have to worry about it.
Exactly, exactly.
But that's not something your program deals with. You need a project that's about to go in or considering going in.
Is considering going in. I mean, a lot of times...
And you've done some of these already.
We have. We've done a gas station in a downtown area, which was heavily contaminated, and we can't do cleanups. A lot of people will say, well, can you help us do the cleanups? And we can't. The grants are for a site assessment, to do soil testing. We've done soil borings, all the way up to what's called a due care plan, which is for the new property owner. And it kind of lays out what they should be doing in order to protect the public health and the environment based on whatever level of contamination. Sometimes there is no due care plan, but it's based on the amount of contamination. So we've done that. We've done work.
And you mentioned like a due care plan could be as simple as paving over the affected parts so that water doesn't keep seeping in there and lowering it further into the ground table.
Exactly. And a lot of the fixes... That we've looked at are pretty cost effective. People get scared because it's a brownfield and it's contaminated, but if the right process is followed, it protects the new property owner from any kind of past liabilities, and from our perspective, puts that property back into active use.
And gets them on the tax rolls, vitalized. You've got employees and all this other stuff that do well for a community.
Exactly, economic development.
We come full circle, don't we, Carl?
Amazing how that works. So,
you've also done this in Caseville.
Before the post-production studio was under construction, we were able to use some of our EPA funds to go in, look at that site to ensure that there were no underground fuel oil tanks, that the property wasn't a past gas station. They did a historical analysis of the site, talked to the neighbors. I mean... And so we were able to do a lot of the stuff prior to the community buying that property and building the studio.
Which is set to open, I think, next month. I talked to Bob the other day, and he's going to actually be our guest next week on this program.
I will have to listen. Mr. Brown is an interesting individual. Has a rich history, and we're excited to see the studio up and running, or hopefully soon.
Another feather in our EDC camp.
Well, we keep trying to plug away. Okay. So we're always looking for projects.
You mentioned you got a grant. Is this something that's only got like a year left, and you need to expend these monies? So
yes.
If people have a project coming, you know, get it while you can.
Right. You know, and it can be from either direction. It's a 3-year grant. We're just beginning our third year of the grant, so we've still got about 12 months left, and it can come from either direction. A private property owner, a bank, or whoever who owns some property that might be contaminated can contact us. And if they've got an interested buyer, maybe the buyer is a little reluctant, we can come in and work with that with the present owner. Or we can work it from the other direction. I'm a person who wants to, or you're a person that wants to buy a piece of property and develop it or redevelop it. We can work with you and the property owner to gain access to the property and do the testing. Some of the early concerns that we heard was that because we're using these grant dollars and it's EPA grant, that we can just go out and, you know, arbitrarily start testing things and discovering brownfields. We can only go on to a piece of property with the property owner's permission. Otherwise, we don't participate.
And most property owners would like such a service because it helps them sell their property.
Exactly. And it protects the new property owner. So, I mean, everybody benefits. We have about a year left. The grant was actually we received technically two grants. We received $200,000 for petroleum contamination sites and then $200,000 for hazardous contamination sites. And there's kind of a gray line in there someplace. So we've got $400,000 total. We've been using the petroleum one up. There's been a lot of projects where we've had to go in and do some soil borings. And
what roughly does a study normally cost around? I know it varies depending on how big the site is and how what they initially find, but they've been running 100,000.
Well, probably the smallest one is probably $5,000 or $6,000. That's for some historic stuff. We're in the middle of doing one where we just authorized $57,000 of grant funds to help pay for some soil borings. That's not the whole project. That was just the soil borings.
But what you've got left could do a couple of projects easily.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why we want to inform the community about the resources that we have.
Do they need to... is it more difficult to do it when the ground is frozen and stuff? Is it easier to do it now? Is it better if they get at least the ball rolling this fall?
Absolutely. Yeah, we can't go in and do really good soil borings when it's 40 degrees.
You can do the
zero.
History of the property,
right.
But a physical examination when it's covered like last year with 4 feet of snow is a little difficult. Unless the snow is melting because of the contamination, you don't know.
And we kind of bumped into that with some of the work we did up in Caseville, where we wanted to get in early because we were worried that it might snow. So weather conditions do impact. So if we can get the projects now, we can get them rolling. Or if we get them in the middle of winter, we can do all the paperwork and get ready to do whatever we need to do in the field in the spring as soon as the weather breaks. So,
because you're not necessarily on a calendar year. You're on a fiscal year, which may end in October,
right.
Which is going to make a difference if you wait too long.
Right. So we're looking for projects in the brownfield. We think it's a great win-win for the communities, for the property owners, and hopefully we'll get some good economic development projects out of it.
And get some properties in some nice areas that could use some revitalization, get a neighborhood going again when they've got their neighborhood gas station party store back or whatever is going to go in.
Exactly. So we can provide some of those things. In fact, what we're looking at doing is there's a new grant cycle coming up. In the next 30, 45 days that we're considering not just Huron County, but doing a regional project with possibly Sanilac and Tuscola counties. We're not sure. We're still talking with both counties about that opportunity. But we think that we can everybody's looking at regional projects now. That's the new buzzword. So we want to try to regionalize it. So we're talking with our neighbors to see if we can expand that. Sanilac and Tuscola have already had these grants, and they've use the funds up. So what we're hoping to do is to get a new injection of funds, and possibly one of the things that we're considering and that we're talking with some folks about is getting some federal dollars to put into a revolving loan fund just for brownfield, so that a new developer can come in. They could tap into the revolving loan fund to help revitalize that at a low interest rate to help revitalize that piece of property.
And as they pay it back, you've got money back in the revolving fund to do it all over again.
For other projects. The advantage is that we could do it on a regional basis, and especially in rural areas, it's tough to get a kind of a critical mass of projects going where it can actually, you can generate enough funds where it makes a difference. With a regional project, we think that we can easily show that kind of performance.
And regionalization, the state's looking at that basically because instead of getting 83 grant applications from 83 counties, you get them from regions, you're down to maybe 15, 20.
Exactly.
And then it's a whole lot easier to go through, and you don't have to have three times the staff just to go through the application.
To do that. And, you know, we look at our neighbors in Sanilac and Tuscola County. The counties are similar. We have similar demographics. The economies are similar. So we think it makes a lot of sense to try to do something on a regional basis, especially with things like brownfield, because then it's not just the Huron EDC doing it, but we would share services with Tuscola EDC and with the folks in Sanilac County.
And you already share a little bit with Sanilac already. You do some grant writing and stuff to help them out.
We do. We've been working with the Sanilac Board of Commissioners on a contractual basis. They've contracted with our EDC in Huron County to provide technical services, grant writing, those kind of things back to the communities in Sanilac County. So we've been busy.
Busy, busy, busy. Why don't we pause for 60 seconds, and we'll be right back.
If you're a farmer, you should know Farm Bureau Insurance. After all, you know how tricky insurance can be. Did you remember to add that new planter you bought? What about the truck? Did you switch that over?
the equipment you'll be using will need to be added. If you're a farmer, you should know Farm Bureau Insurance, because Farm Bureau Insurance works with you to get all your needs taken care of. From the implements and trucks to the insurance on your workers, your local Huron County Farm Bureau agent will walk with you every step of the way. If you're a farmer and you don't know Farm Bureau Insurance, call one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents today. It could just be one of the most important calls you make. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Contact one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Deb McBride or Corey Vollmer in Elkton, Casey Yan in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, Tim Fritz in Bad Axe, or Bill Weitzel in Pigeon.
Michigan, my Michigan.
We're back with Carl Osentoski, Executive Director of the Huron County Economic Development Corporation. And again, thanks for being with us, Carl.
Anytime.
We were talking about regionalization, and I understand the state has kind of put a region together that they're considering for us.
Yeah, interesting how that happens. The state before had never had any kind of regionalization. They've talked a lot about it for economic development. And so what they're trying to do is to create 10 regions throughout the state for economic development. But what they're also doing is looking at other services that would be in that region. In our region is tentative. We haven't been accepted by the state yet, but they kind of indicated that this would be the region. So we think it's going to be the region. It's Huron, Tuscola, Santa Ana counties, Bay, Saginaw, Midland, Gratiot, Isabella, Clare, Gladwin, and Aranac. So, and they're calling it the Great Lakes Bay region. From our perspective, what that'll do is that'll allow us to talk to our coworkers, our friends over in Saginaw, Bay, Midland, to kind of coordinate activities. What the state is also considering doing is looking at other kinds of regionalization. Department of Transportation offices have already been regionalized. State police have already been regionalized. So we think that there's going to be more and more emphasis on that particular region with other state resources. DNR, DEQ, Transportation, Department of Agriculture will all be kind of focused on this region. State resources will be talking to each other. The EDCs will be talking to each other. So we can kind of look at how we can get the most bang for our buck in that region by regionalizing. In our case, in the EDC's case, a lot of these counties already have their own individual EDCs. So what we'll do is we'll put together a working group of EDC directors, get together once a month, talk about projects, try to set priorities of, you know, within that region and continue to kind of work on any kind of progress.
Is this, you know, it's still in its infancy. I mean,
right.
You guys haven't really pieced it together, but is there concerns that, you know, a lot of times it goes to the bigger towns and the rurals don't get their fair piece of the pie, and you know, you do have Bay, Saginaw counties in there, which have and Midland, mm-hmm. has some large communities in it and large urban needs.
It's always a concern, and we've expressed that concern several times, because again, our concern is when the state is looking at limited resources and they're looking at where they're going to put those resources, a lot of times there's a tendency from the state level to say, well, we're going to put it into the urban centers. And we'll think about rural areas later. And part of my job is to make sure that they don't say that rural areas, at least in Huron, Sanilac, and, you know, with our friends in Tuscola County, to continue to look at that and say, how is that going to impact rural areas? Are there resources coming into those rural areas that we need? I mean, the folks in urban areas, Saginaw, Bay City, Midland, need the resources as well. They have population density. They have all of those pieces. But without strong rural areas, the urban centers kind of start falling by the wayside as well. So we need to work together.
And that's part of the organizational process. And
right.
How it's going to be set up, whether each, you know, EDC locally is going to submit something to the regional group and then they review it and send it on, or whether, you know, they're going to try and take the whole ball.
Exactly. So, you know, kind of as we kind of thought through this, I mean, we'll see a lot of cooperation in Bay Saginaw Midland just because they're similar. But we think that there's some opportunities to work with Clare County, with Gratiot County, Some of those folks, we've been in discussions with Gratiot County about some of the wind projects that are going on in Gratiot. So we've been sharing ideas, resources back and forth. So there's some already some opportunities to share ideas and resources around this region.
Which are similar, as you mentioned, with the wind thing to Huron, San Juan, and Tuscola, as opposed to the winds going into Bay and Saginaw, where they have urban things and other things to deal with.
Right. And the environment's a lot different over in urban areas. They have airports, big airports that they have to contend with. They have, you know, urban densities. They have lots of other issues that in rural areas, our issues are a lot different. So it makes some sense. So we've already talked to some of our EDC directors over on the west side. They're talking with us about how we might be able to cooperate, share ideas and resources in rural areas. One of the other interesting opportunities that we've been kind of dealing with is this is being proposed by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Part of the governor's reorganization in the state also included the Michigan Department of Agriculture, which is now called Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. So we've been pressing them really, really hard on what does that rural development mean?
Well, but it's also national, USDA, and they have their own rural development, which gives grants and stuff for rural areas
in
particular.
And so we've already met with the folks from Michigan State Housing Development Authority, Michigan Department of Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, to look at how we can develop concepts and ideas for rural development. Because the issues are a lot different in urban areas as opposed to rural areas. We have transportation problems. We have, or issues. We have population densities because we're not as dense. Our communities are smaller. So we have different issues and we have to approach things differently. You know, we have to look at the resources that we have and how do we reuse those? We look at brownfields. We look at, you know, how do we revitalize our downtown areas? So those are the kinds of things that we've been pressing really hard with Department of Agriculture and Rural Development on, and trying to figure out what role the state is going to play, and especially in that rural development side. Is it going to be more related to agribusiness development? And we've seen some really nice agribusiness development in the area. And continue to see nice growth in the ag economy up here.
But then again, getting to talk to them as they're setting up, because they just started this, so, you know, they're just, you know, gave them the title at the beginning of the year, you know, that
did,
type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like they're still feeling themselves through the process, and if you can help direct it in a way that helps agriculture and rural communities, all the better.
And helps Huron County. That's why we wanted to be meeting with them early and often so that we can express our ideas, what's going to benefit our communities in the Thumb area, and to see revitalization.
You kind of touched on it when you were talking there with the downtown and
yes.
getting buildings filled. You have kind of a program that's going to hearken us back to the old days of...
the new old days.
What's old is new again.
Well, as we've been looking at our downtown areas, there's a lot of downtowns that have vacant commercial space in the core downtown.
And it's not just the commercial space downstairs, but they may have rental space upstairs and other things.
Typically, the buildings are two stories, and that lends itself to some of the ideas. And that's the concept, and it goes back years and years and years. The new term for it is live workspace. There's always a new term for it. But basically, the business sets up shop in the bottom floor, and the owners of that business live in the top floor, kind of the mom-and-pop operation that, you know.
The way it was in 1930 downtown Bad Axe, probably.
Exactly. And that's what we want to do, is to work with the property owners, with the DDAs, with the communities, and to look at identifying buildings that might be available for redevelopment, to work with developers, to work with the resources that we're just now discovering. Michigan State Housing Development Authority has programs for housing rehabilitation in downtowns. So we want to look at how we can leverage those resources along with rural development, along with USDA, and bring people back into downtowns. In urban centers, you need 100, 1,000 people downtown. In a rural area, we need 5 businesses downtown to revitalize it. And if we can put those families and those business owners upstairs, that forces those people, they might be using the restaurants downtown. They'll be using the other businesses downtown. We hear all of the talk about sustainability and walkability. Our downtowns are walkable. Historically, we've always been walkable in rural areas. So we want to look at how we can use that resource that's already existing and recycle it and kind of look at historic development patterns, you know, the mom and pop grocery stores or the, you know, the clothing stores where the owners would live upstairs and they would be running the businesses. Could be attorneys, could be artists. It could be.
You're going a little less than what it used to be when you didn't have the hardware store downtown because it's kind of hard to compete with the ones that have all the floor space in the world. But a specialty shop, like you say, where you have a designer or something like that, perfect.
It's perfect. They can walk downtown, lots of light in the buildings. I mean, and again, we may be able to look at those resources. One of the other concepts that we're looking at is something called co-working spaces. And it's kind of like a Starbucks without the Starbucks, where you could go in, get high-speed wireless internet, rent a desk, a table for, you know, an hour, a week, a month, a year. You'd get some technical resources. There might be a photocopier, coffee. But the idea is that instead of working in your home office, which gets kind of lonely sometimes, people want to be social. And if we can provide them with some spaces to be social and bring them into the downtown, we get that, again, we get that business circulating in the downtown. They may go break for lunch over at the restaurant, you know, walk to the park. We get people circulating downtown. It adds to the strength of those communities. So that's really kind of what we're looking at trying to do, is to kind of refocus a lot of opportunities back into the existing infrastructure, the buildings that are already there. We've been watching with interest and have had some preliminary discussions. We haven't kind of pushed it out into the communities yet, but something called pop-up retail. And you see it all the time in the malls where the Christmas store or the Halloween store pops up, and it's there for a month.
For a month and a half, and then it's gone.
And then it's gone. That's pop-up retail. And kind of our spin on this is we could use some of our local artists, Thumb Arts Guild, you know, you name it. We can bring those artists together for a weekend. We don't advertise it. We work with the building owner, and those artisans have their sale, or it could be a single artist. It could, but it pops up in downtown Harbor Beach for a weekend. We use all the social media, Twitter, Facebook, advertise it. There's no print advertising. It's very quick, and you have to be on the mailing list, so it kind of creates that exclusive function. And it gets people into those downtowns, and we just send out a Twitter feed to everybody on our mailing list and says, you know, Carl's going to be at the pop-up store, or we're going to have these 6 artists at the pop-up store this weekend. That weekend it disappears, and it might reappear in Seapoint. 3 weeks later, different artist. And what it does is it kind of creates that flow of people into the area, into the downtowns. It reuses that commercial space, even if it's for a weekend or a week. And hopefully it'll attract people, and they might say, this is really a nice downtown. Maybe I need a live workspace. So we're trying to build some synergies between some of these activities out into the local community so we can encourage people to look at downtowns, get them into the downtowns, and hopefully we can provide some additional business services if we can identify a co-working space. We could bring in small business counseling. We can have training programs with the colleges and universities. If it's got high-speed internet, we have video conferencing. So the instructors could be at Saginaw Valley, Delta. We could be offering those courses right in the co-working space.
And many downtowns have a development authority. There's a group there that's already working to promote downtown. You become part of this, as opposed to being out on your own somewhere between towns and trying to generate walk-in business on your own.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, they support each other, chambers of commerce, DDAs, I mean, all of those kinds of organizations. So, and we've got some great communities that we can showcase and highlight. We've got one of the areas that we want to try to look at utilizing too is our shoreline. I mean, that's a natural draw to folks. If we can, during the Port Austin Farmers Market, have folks signing up for our pop-up store Twitter feeds, we get people from around the state, actually around the country, and our Canadian neighbors as well, could be coming back up into the area for lots of activities. So there's some really fun things that we're kind of looking at doing. But, you know, again, we need to work with the communities, look for spaces.
It sounds like you need, like, the Thumb Arts Guild or somebody to kind of roll, take the ball and run with it, because I don't think you want to be doing all this.
Well,
you want this to be self-sustaining beyond your office.
Right, right. We're willing to work with, you know, community groups, art organizations, DDAs, whatever it might be, to kind of take the ball and run with it. We can provide technical resources. We can, you know, provide the ideas. We have an art trail brochure that we've been tracking 63 artists around the area that we put into a trail brochure. So we can do that. Artisan food. You know, we've got our kitchen incubator. We could be selling, you know, that on a year-round basis. And again, the stores could be short-term. They pop up. We sell the product, get people into the downtown, and then it goes to a different community. And we get people circulating not just in the communities but throughout the region as well.
Terrific. I want to talk a little bit about broadband. There's been talk of, we've seen right in front of the radio station here, actually, folks at Pigeon Telephone, AVCI, those people have been putting in some fiber optics to get up a 4G
yep.
network in the area.
Yep.
And all of this bodes well for businesses who not only need it in their office, but their employees like to have it too. It just makes it better all the way around.
Oh, absolutely. And it benefits a lot of people. You know, are uncertain about what broadband is and how it's going to benefit them, other than, you know, you can surf the internet faster, which is an important thing.
Well, in business, time is money.
Well, exactly. And the competition is global. I mean, it's an eighth of a second. If I click on somebody in Singapore, I'm at their website in Singapore, you know. But again, they could be surfing the internet and click on a button and they're in Bad Axe, Michigan. So the competition is global, and we need that speed in order to compete on a global basis. Our manufacturing companies tell us that, you know, they need that kind of bandwidth to move their blueprints back and forth from their affiliates and their customers.
If they're supposed to make a part, they don't always just get a part or something in the mail that gets downloaded to them, and it has to be precise, exact, and and sometimes they send prototypes electronically that build up in these machines and actually make it so the person on the other end can see it physically, handle it, see if it is exactly what they want. So there's a whole lot of need for that in business.
Absolutely. Commercial businesses, they'll be ordering off their catalogs and working with their customers, their retail customers, on getting parts or, you know, whatever they need. They need that connectivity. We talked about, you know, working in downtowns. If I'm a designer, I need to have access to high-speed internet. If I'm an attorney, I need access to high-speed internet. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, people take for granted. But
in our area, being like a little peninsula, there are a few pipelines going out, and that's your bandwidth.
That's it.
And every time somebody's doing a credit card transaction, every time somebody is on the internet surfing, all of that is eating it down a little bit. So
yes.
What's left, you know, is what you're trying to promote to business.
And that's where we like to see the kind of investment that Pigeon Telephone and Thumb Cellular are investing in the local communities. Air Advantage received a USDA grant to connect schools, hospitals, libraries, municipal buildings.
Hospitals send x-rays and CAT scans and stuff electronically. Now they don't have to drive them over. And again, that's bandwidth. It's got to be precise because you've got to see every detail.
Exactly. You know, and if somebody's reading an x-ray at the Cleveland Clinic, you want to make sure that everything gets to the Cleveland Clinic.
What's this big hole here?
Yeah. So, And hospitals are huge users of bandwidth just because of the nature of the business. I mean,
and then you've got all the billing they do, all that other things that have to, it all takes up some of their bandwidth they're using now.
And so the more bandwidth that we can get, the pigeon telephone companies, the air advantages, the better it is for the community. I mean, it provides a stable base, lots of bandwidth, and we can then use that story to tell business owners that, you know, they can come out and do business in our downtowns and our live workspaces and have that kind of connectivity where in maybe in some of the more urban neighborhoods, they can't get that. And our communities are walkable, they're safe. So we think we've got a really good story. Once that is installed and operating, we're more than happy to tell the story about, you know, the connectivity and the stories of our communities. So we encourage that. We do everything we can to support the work with the local businesses for the installation of that kind of broadband service. It's absolutely critical.
It can only help.
It can only help.
And what's on the horizon in EDC? I know changes have been coming in Lansing. Are there things you're seeing going in different directions now?
Well, we talked a little bit about some of the...
The regionalization.
There's going to be, again, one of the governor's big pushes is for export. They want to double the amount of export business that Michigan businesses do. We, in the Thumb area, see that as agriculture.
We do a lot of exporting already. A lot of our beans go south and stuff like that.
Exporting in the agricultural industry is the only business that has done really well.
Oh, okay.
Along with the domestic use, but agriculture has saved the state of Michigan. The governor, I think, has admitted that over and over again. So that's where we get excited to look at, you know, how we can use our natural resources, our farm community, and continue to build those exports. Our challenge is our farmers can grow it. They're great at what they do. And our co-ops, our grain handling system are great. They've been investing enormous amounts of dollars in capacity so they can serve our farm community. The challenge is to move that commodity out of the area into the export markets.
Now, initially we saved our railroads that were going to be torn up, and we got a system going where we can do some of that.
Well,
but they're also talking about a port in Harbor Beach and other things like that that could take a whole lot of the load off.
Absolutely. And that's where we think that, you know, by looking at a combination of those kinds of resources, rail and rail improvement, you know, are there ways that we can encourage the rail companies to continue to invest? Surface transportation, the roads have been great. But there's been a lot of discussion about the port in Harbor Beach. We've talked with the DTE Energy, which actually owns that dockage, and they're interested in further discussions. They have not said. Typically, when we talk to large companies, their automatic response is no. What's nice about it is DTE has said, yeah, that's an interesting idea. We have the facility.
They have a coal-fired plant right there where they could use that harbor to bring in their own supplies, maybe cheaper too.
And they have been. They've been using, they bring the coal in on freighters. And so we're looking at how do we continue to repurpose or work with DTE to repurpose that particular facility. One of the things that we've talked with folks about is the development of a foreign trade zone at that port facility. And what that does is that minimizes some of the federal taxes, import-export tariffs, that material coming into that facility would have to pay. So if I'm a manufacturer and I'm bringing in Italian steel to manufacture and I'm going to export it to South America, I don't have to pay any import or export tariffs on that material as it moves through that facility. So it's a great benefit. It makes me more competitive because I can reduce my cost or my costs are modified a little bit. So there's some really interesting opportunities because it is a shipping port. It's one of the few shipping deep water ports on the east side of the state.
And it's got a protected harbor.
And again, it's how do we maximize the resources we already have, not build new ones. The port is already there. The channel and the dockage is already there. How do we think creatively to expand that. You know, can we ship out beans in containers? What does that look like? You know, how do they need different kind of handling equipment on the shoreline? So that's the process that we're engaged in right now, is try to understand who would be using that, where would they be shipping to.
Sounds almost like you'd almost have to have a separate business that just like runs the port and then you know, people bring their stuff there, and it's up to them to make sure it's shipped properly, and you know, we aren't, you know, spilling a load of beans into the bay or anything. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Into the harbor, and you know, all of these types of things, because you don't want to be doing it, obviously. And
in my spare time.
Yeah. But I mean, it sounds like, as opposed to each company having, you know, a place there to load their boats, it would be, you'd need something that would be universal.
Right. Right, and that's where the development of Port Authority, we've had some ideas about maybe contracting with the Port of Detroit to offer some management services there. Because
like a sub-facility?
Exactly, kind of like a franchise. Because they have the technical expertise to be able to do that. They know the shipping, they know all of those pieces. And again, the Edison still uses their dock to move coal in, so there has to be accommodations for that. But to have the technical expertise, if we have a foreign trade zone, you really need a foreign trade zone person that has to catalog the material coming in, being processed, material leaving, so that the customs service knows all of everything that's going through there.
Would you need someone from customs there when you're having a boat come in and do that?
Possibly.
Because you've got people on the boat that, you know, may not be from this country, and they're going to want to step ashore and have a burger and do all the other stuff that people do when they get into port.
Exactly. So, yes, there would probably have to be some type of customs presence, whether it be, you know, to identify or just to kind of signal the customs service to send folks up when a ship was coming in. Again, it's part of the whole process of, you know, do we have the local expertise? Can we work with a partner that has the expertise, the Port of Detroit? Port Huron has some resources that we might be able to work with.
And I would imagine in the beginning you'd have to line up enough people who want to use the port so that you can start making all these plans, because you don't want to set everything up and have a port sitting there.
Have a party and no one comes. And that's what we're looking at right now is, you know, who would be using that facility? You know, would they be shipping beans out? Would they be shipping, you know, I've heard some discussions about a powdered milk plant. You know, how would that be shipped? Would it be shipped in bulk? Would it be shipped in containers? You know, if we're partnering with somebody like Port Huron or Detroit, would that be Great Lakes freighters, or would that be barges that could just move in? The advantages of a barge is that the draft isn't quite as deep, and so we don't have to dredge as often.
The difficulty is that we have Lake Huron weather, and barges don't always
travel well.
They're not as stable as a full-size ship.
Yeah, so those are some of the challenges. And then once we identify some of the local shipping companies, where do they ship to? So that, you know, does it have to go through customs? Is it all domestic? Is it within the Great Lakes Basin? So it's to kind of understand some of the preliminary mechanics, where it comes from and where it's going, and then we can kind of custom design resources and partners that we can kind of bring into the process, whether it be, you know, Detroit, Port Huron. There's some great technical folks over in Battle Creek, which actually has a foreign trade zone, and has been doing pretty well for the last 20 or 30 years. So,
but they have Kellogg's.
They do, and that's part of why they're over there. So, you know, and we've talked to them several times. They're interested in working with us, providing some technical assistance for us. But we've got to understand locally what we're going to be shipping through there and where it's going to before we can start engaging some of our state partners.
And the impact on truck traffic in the town. All these other things have to come into play. So I assume you'll have this all set up by next Tuesday.
Yeah. I got nothing going on this
weekend. A lot of work ahead, but a lot of interesting things.
It is. The horizon. My job is never boring. Never boring.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time with us today, Carl.
It's always fun.
And if people have questions, your office number is?
269-6431.
And you're open Monday through Friday, and if you're not around, a gal in the office will take it.
They know where I am.
And you're available to businesses, communities that might need grant writing, all these types of things the county EDC office is there for. Utilize it. It's there.
That's why we're here.
Thanks again.
Anytime.
Do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll clue you in on the latest in the news. Our guest today has been Carl Ossentoski, Executive Director of the Huron County EDC.